Okay, thank you. So I guess the title doesn't explain what I'm going to do during the talk. Maybe it makes it clear when you look at this thing. So I really brought some boxes. None of those are living. And we'll try to understand if there is essential difference between those one and the bacteria that past September 11, I'm not allowed to carry them when they are alive. And continuing with the tradition that we had before, I'll pose some questions. The main course will be trying to do some hints or some observations, some clues, and we're working on the dessert still. The dessert supposed to be a movie with a touch of humor that wrap all these things together. Now, let me start with some of these questions and share with you some of the ways that we view what happened in the previous program lunch talk. Later on, Bielo kindly volunteered to add some perspective. I asked him and he agreed. Some perspective from superstring cosmology and see that they are maybe convinced of some analogies, or at least on the metaphoric levels. So if I recall what happened last thing of the other program, we looked at the universe. Just to remind you, we look at a scale that was much larger than our own scale, because we looked at out of this box, and this box was supposed to represent our light cone part of the universe. And we talked about going into the future, extrapolating into the past where superstrings and cosmology might be connected, and also going a bit outside of the box to other universes. Well, now we are much more modest because we take here a spot, which if you enlarge, this is the scale of the galaxies that before it was from here up, so we go from here down, but not quite to the galaxy. What we go is to the solar system, and this is Earth, and then we go to Earth, and then from Earth we go back to ourselves and try to understand ourselves in terms of other creatures and boxes of life. Now, just to put some scales, when we talked here, I don't know how to estimate these scales. People do, because it's 10 billion, so it's 10 to the 10 years, times the speed of light, and times the number of seconds in a year. So it's large. Let's go. And so you had this scale, and it was tried to connect it with a nice abstract notion of a string that is about 10 to the minus 35 meters, which is Planck constant. And this is an abstract notion that's supposed to represent what we know. Here, we start from this, and this is important, which is about 10 to the 11 meter. Then you go to Earth, which is about 10 to the 7 meters. Then you go to human being, which is on the scale of 1 meter. And if you go down, you can ask yourself, is there essential, unitary, or basic entity that corresponds in some sense to the entity which is talked here or presented here? Well, some people think that there is, and this basic entity is not a single string, but a double string, which is called, I'd like to convince you, and there is a lot of work being concentrated on this double screen. This double string presumably plays an important role, or some people think that even more important role than this string, but we're not doing quality judgments. What I want to show you, that there is big differences between this one and this one, but some things are in common. And Gabriello will correct me, this thing cannot function by itself. So basically, this is not the unitary if you want, box of life. The unitary box of life, I try to convince you, at least on Earth, is a bacterium, individual bacterium. And the point is that this by itself is not a living creature. It cannot generate life because it's missing one important element. And this important element is the membrane in which it wraps. And I try to convince you that this fact is very crucial because it has to do from here up to here. I show you there is a very nice consistency in terms of energy balance. So if you look at the first law of thermodynamics, everything is fine. But if you try to ask question about the second law or about information, you have some difficulties. They are not resolved by this, but at least it's a step towards it. And if I understood correctly from Riello, it has to do something in a metaphoric sense to this question over here, namely what he will talk about, not looking at a single string, but looking at a superstring which is wrapped into a membrane. Or we've seen a scale of a black hole, but this is his job. I'm not going to talk about these things. Here, if you go down to the scale, this string is discrete, and the basic element has a dimension of 0.3 nanometer. So if you look at cascade of scales, it's not that impressive from cosmological point of view, because it's only 20 orders of magnitude. Okay, but there is more to the story, and let me now tell you a little bit. This will be a very, very brief orientation, because it is all there. Let me leave this part here. We go back to it. Okay. If you look at superstring, again, I'll come back to it. If you look at the double helix, there is one, it lives in a dimensions, higher dimensional space, and the higher dimensional space is 64 dimensions. Why 64? Because in order to understand it, there are 22 amino acids. So you can reduce it to 22 dimensions. And the amino acids are defined using four-dimensional space of the nucleic acid or the bases, which in order to define one amino acid, you need three of them. That's called codon. So you reduce from four to three dimension. Eventually, you can group them together, and they are grouped together into C and G that are complementary A and T. So you can say that they are reduced to two dimensions. Now, what you are used to talk here about excitations, we talk here about expression. Now, I don't know what is the dimensions here. I think it used to be 22. It went down to 11 dimensions, but then you have confinement to the four dimension of space plus time, and then you can go down from this, and you have two different ones, and then this is one graviton. But as I promise, I'm not going to talk about this too much. Just that this is abstract. And this is concrete. You can go and take, put some cells within some mixture of detergent, they break open, you can take a stick, pull them out, and see them. They are quite long. As I told you, about one gene, talk about expression, one gene is about 1,000 bases. So the length of this is about 300 nanometers. All these are very important. There is another thing which is very important. The energy of excitations here, I will not talk, but the typical energy here, delta E, is of the order of 1 electron volt. It's not giga electron volt, neither it is 10 to the 2 giga electron volt, or some other people think about other levels. That's delta E. It's 1 electron volt, and for very good reasons. And I try to convince you why. There is a characteristic time, which is of the order of 1 millisecond. Now, unlike in high energy or other branches of physics, in the living world, when you go from the very elementary element, or basic element, to the creatures, to the entire bacterium, to the cell, to the organism, the basic energy scale and the basic time scale remain the same. So we have a different situation. One has to keep in mind. Why these are the scales? And I tell you what is the 1 millisecond. For example, replication time. Of the basis is 1 millisecond. Throughout entire kingdom of life, from the bacterium to the human being. This is the rate that you replicate your information basis. Why it is? In a second. Why this is a more harder question, and it's not clear. And I'll tell you what it is, why. Okay. I believe I covered most of the data about the DNA, if people didn't know about. Yes, good.
Delta E that you're speaking about. There are, of course, vibrational frequencies.
Right. This is the energy which is required, the input energy, in order to replicate, the amount of energy, more or less, which is required to replicate one base. It's of the order of magnitude, because you have all the chemical processes and so on. And I'll come, I'll come to it. It's very important. There is one mystery here. If you look at the dimensions, because there is redundancy, you have 3 bases to form amino acids. So there is a lot of redundancy because you have only 22 amino acids and you have 64 different combinations. And people try to think about quite a bit. The common wisdom usually is that it's just the inefficiency of life. I try to propose that this is not the case. But it has a very good reason why they have this redundancy or additional freedom in forming this information that eventually builds all the proteins that form life. Okay. But after this very brief orientation, people were concerned about life and the energy and all of this thing in the past. So let me erase this, hope people will remember, just leave this in. Well, the story goes back to Erwin Schrödinger. Schrödinger wrote a book in 1942, which is called What is Life? Most people are not aware of this fact. Those that are aware that he wrote a book assume that, well, at some level in life, many physicists turn into philosophers, and some people in physics think that philosophy is an unmentionable word. But one of the things that he did in this book, the book was not aimed to answer the question, what is life? So the one thing he didn't do in the book is try to define life. And nobody does. What he tried to ask is if life represents some contradiction to what we know in physics, basic law of physics of non-living system, or is it consistent? And what is special about life? And he started from this scale over here of Earth. And what he looked at is try to see if it contradicts the philosophy of Maxwell Demon and so on, how can you reduce entropy? Because in order for life to evolve, basically you start with Earth that has matter around, that has low level of entropy, and a high level of entropy, you need to reduce the entropy. How do you do it? So we know from second year of physics that in order to do it, you need a Carnot machine or some other kind of machine. And he said that the fact that the universe that was here is expanding, well, he didn't say it in the book, the fact that we have the galaxies that rotate around, and the fact that we have the solar system that happened to be such that we have this planet which goes around a heat source which is very, very high temperature, and it turns around, you get some engine which is very interesting, because what you have energy coming here to this side, which facing the sun, which is hot, so you have T high, and you radiate energy out at the side which is cold. So this is T cold. So what you have all the time, you bring in energy with low entropy, and you take out or deposit to the environment energy with high entropy. So the net is that you decrease entropy. And that's a very essential point in the fact, because this is the first box in which we live. So the first principle of the first box of life, according to Schrödinger, you have a balance and you all the time reducing the entropy of this box, at least on the surface. Well, you reduce it in a rate, you get energy at a rate which is about 1500 watt per 1 meter square. Another thing which is important to realize is that you receive most of this energy in quanta which are of the order of 1 electron volt. And it so happened that Earth is at the right distance from the sun, and the amount of energy which arrives is such that the temperature on the surface of Earth is what it is. T is of the order of 300 Kelvin. So that what you have, the balance that you maintain is such that K Boltzmann T, the immediate background, equals about, or 40 times 1 over 40 of 1 electron volt. And that's very important, because what it means is that you can absorb quanta of energy which is not too high relative to the mass, but it's high enough. And I try to convince you that this is very crucial later on. Okay, the next step that he did is to wonder what happened to the human being. So the next box that he talked about is the human being. And what he said is that we eat food. Some people don't like this kind of argument, but if you think about it, you have the human being or other organism, we do get energy such that delta E, delta T, if you want, symbolically, or delta S that we get in is low. And it's not nice to plot, but delta S that we get out is high. Sometimes it's higher, sometimes it's lower. Okay, so you have something here which makes sense why we reduce all the time our entropy. And it means that if we eat food that has high level of order, probably we can get better. So it's better to eat, for example, rice that has 50,000 genes, or to have different meat and so on, but we talk about, and this brings back to what you ask about the glia in a very abstract way. Well, Good. But now you hide this thing. You remember Herbie Levine talk with the tale about the turtle. So the turtle is the same. It eats grass and it has the same balance. And you ask yourself, but where does the turtle get this low level entropy food? And then you say, well, maybe there is another turtle here, a smaller one that can do it better. And then there is another one and another one. Well, there is one down there, not all the way to the bottom, but to the level of one bacterium, because none of the boxes of life, may it be a human being or any other organism on Earth, cannot produce the miracle of taking inorganic matter and turn it into organic matter that has lower entropy. So the basic riddle is, and this is our elementary box, how bacteria do it. Because bacteria do wonderful thing. They take delta S, which is presumably inorganic high, and take out, nobody studied what, and somehow produce things that agree. Okay. In terms of energy balance, if you assume this situation, it's okay. And this is the main riddle of this talk, that we have this bacterium, you have this string, basic string inside, and somehow they do this miracle. They do another miracle. In 1976, NASA had a very important committee that had to decide how do we define or how we find if there is life on Mars. So they had very clever people that tried to define what is life. I have not been in this committee. I have not seen a report from this committee. I don't know if they used the fact that Schrödinger decided to skip up the definition, but instead try to look at some observable argument. They did not succeed to define what is life. One of the people there, James Lovelock, at least had the sense to ask, let's assume the opposite. Let's assume there are these intelligent little green organisms on Mars, and they send a satellite over Earth, and they want to know if there is life on Earth or not. How can you tell? And presumably, they are very intelligent, but they are not more intelligent than us. So they also don't know how to define life. So how can you tell, if you look at the system as a whole, if there are some intelligent being within this planet? Or some...
intelligent beings or life?
Let's start with intelligent being and forget the computer scientists that say that computer can be intelligent being. If we'd find very nice intelligent computer on Mars, maybe we'd be satisfied. But no, but they talk, you're absolutely right, they talk about life. So you don't know how to define. The point is that usually people associate life, or at least at a high level, and the reason that NASA sent thing is intelligent, but that's a separate question. But let's talk about life. You don't know what life is. You don't know how it looks like, you don't know how to define it, but you want to look for it. How can you tell? Well, at least we feel that we know what life on Earth is. So how they would tell? NASA spend a lot of time also absorbing radiation from outer space, trying to discover the same thing, but let's not talk about NASA. Talk about James Lovelock. And James Lovelock said, that thanks to the fact that we do have life on Earth, namely we do have bacteria, actually bacteria change the temperature on Earth and the content of the atmosphere such that we have the temperature that enable life. So we have self-consistency. But how did they do it? Well, how did they do it, I believe, couples again to the same paradox that we have here. Now, because it's the same question. Now, the question that we have here, well, I make a very big switch. I believe that there is a very elementary question here. Just to make one more last remark before we go to Gambriello, and then I make the demonstration, and then I'll try to come back to this after we see some concrete examples. Okay? There is another thing that I should make comment about this string, super string or super double string inside the bacterium. For the last 50 years, the approach was that of the genome center picture. As I mentioned before, namely, this is, you have all this paradox solved because you have information on these strings. If you want, in some sense, I'll come to this sense in a second, now people start to understand that this is not the case. Although this string is very long, for example, from one bacterium, you have about 1,000 genes. So the size of a bacterium is about 1 micron, but its entire genome is about 1 millimeter. So it has quite a big string to wrap inside. And then it replicates it at a fantastic rate of 1,000 elements per second, or 1 per millisecond. We understand that this is not the story. It keeps it. But if you want, it's understood that it's not one gene, one protein. The intracellular gel or intracellular soup is very important because it what couples between this string to the membrane. So if you want, if I draw a little bit of the analogy, true that we have this string, but it has a very strong coupling with the membrane, which by itself is a dynamical entity that has coupling, non-trivial coupling, with the outside. And somehow people now shift the view, if you want, if I understand correctly from what I read from Tony, is like shifting the, or like the picture in a cosmology between graviton being the picture that you can make as, but you'll talk about it, I guess, about just spin to excitation that is coupled, and then you can get Einstein equation, or something that really form a field like Einstein view it, that you have the entire field. But yeah, but correct, and then please.
I'm going to disappoint you, I guess.
That's not what we talked about, right?
No, I mean this. I think came up is an idea of Sherlock, which came out of a discussion we had after Michael Lofty, I guess. So I will be very short and very simple and probably very disappointing because I will not talk about superstrings at all. So all I wanted to say is the following: suppose I take his picture and instead of putting Earth here, I put a black hole. Okay, a black hole is a little bit a machine like this, a Carnot machine like that, because it is well known that it absorbs any infalling stuff. For instance, high frequency quanta can fall into a black hole. The black hole is black. Classically, it doesn't emit, but actually, quantum mechanically, it emits a thermal radiation with a temperature called Hawking temperature, which is typically very small because it's inversely proportional to the mass of the object. So in the same way as you had those two temperatures, right, allowing a Carnot machine to work, a black hole can be seen as a device which produces entropy and therefore allows for the whole system perhaps some organization. Okay. So what I wanted to make the analogy with is not so much with superstrings, but with a similar problem which comes in cosmology. For instance, if you read the Project Penrose's book, The Emperor's New Mind, it starts exactly from this, not from the black hole, from the Earth and the Sun. And then he asks the questions, therefore, life is due to the fact that there are objects in the sky, sources of low entropy energy. And why are these objects there? Well, it goes back and back and back, and finally it comes to the point that therefore the universe must have originated in a very low entropy state. Otherwise would have thermal death from the birth of the universe on. And this is really one of the big puzzles of modern cosmology, is to understand why the universe initially had a small entropy. How small? Well, you can evaluate that to something like 10 to the 30 cube or 10 to the 90, because our universe at the Planck time consisted of about 10 to the 30 10 to the 90 Planckian size regions, each one with entropy of order 1. And for instance, in order to get this low, quote unquote, entropy, you have to assume that the universe at the beginning was fairly homogeneous and smooth. And for instance, you can try to compare this number with how big the entropy could have been for such an enormously massive object, and by an estimate of Penrose himself, this could have been as big as 10 to the 120, 22, or something like this. Therefore, there's this big mystery of why the initial state of the universe was so ordered. Okay? Now, I believe that the explanation of this has to do somehow with the fact that our universe, what we observe, is not an isolated system. And for instance, I think that the explanation of these numbers given by inflation, the theory of inflation, falls into this category, because inflation pretends that you can explain the entropy of our universe even if you start with very generic initial conditions, very non-homogeneous initial conditions. But if you do that, you end up in a picture in which our universe, the universe we observe, came out of a patch of the original space, which underwent this enormous expansion and went down to a very, very low entropy state before reheating to the present entropy value. And I believe that this has to do with the fact that lots of entropy has been thrown out from what we observe into some other regions which are still inhomogeneous or still inflating or still doing all sorts of things. An even more close analogy is a model I have been working on, and this was my discussion with Eschel after my talk, and this is the idea that the interior of a black hole can become ordered and smooth as a result of this entropy gain, of this negative entropy. So by this conversion of low entropy things into high entropy things, you can gain or reduce the entropy inside. And in fact, when you study the space-time in the inside of a black hole, you typically find a very smooth configuration. For instance, a field which is fairly homogeneous in space and what are called velocity-dominated solutions. So, I mean, one picture that I like, still being worked out, is that perhaps the Big Bang itself corresponds to a singularity at the center of the black hole, and that kind of space-time is fairly homogeneous and low entropic. So I wanted to make this connection in the spirit of increasing the discussion between the two groups here.
So now, okay, what I'm going to do, no, that's fine. Now, because now I'm going to make a huge, if you want, either dive or going up from this question of entropy and how it is connected with the question of self-organization and so on in a very simple system. And the system that I'm going to use is the Petri dish. So we went from the bacteria to the black hole, and now we go to another dimension, and this is the dimension of a Petri dish. And see if we can do something so naive and still get some ideas about some of these thoughts. Well, the nice thing about demonstration that even if you don't agree with the conclusion, you can still enjoy. Okay. And this demonstration, I developed them when I had to give a talk for an institute, Philosophy of Science. And that was a disaster. Because they didn't like it. They thought that question about black holes are much more fascinating. Well, there are several things that I want to show you. First is the different color. It all goes back to Turing, 1952. Turing wanted to understand the difference between, going back to intelligent, the differences between the brain and computers, and he tried to understand self-organization. He is the founder of both artificial intelligence and the field of self-organization. And he realized several things. First of all, the system has to be open. Second thing is that you need competition between at least two tendencies. What you have here are food colors. You saw the difference in pattern of the different food colors. And if you leave now the system for the next program on pattern formation in the institute, or when we solve the problems of life, probably it will reach what we usually so love in undergraduate studies, maximum entropy. Okay, but it will take long, long time. Well, you can accelerate it by doing external engineered self-organization. I didn't have to do it when I was very young, so I enjoy doing it now. And you see, you can do art. We have the artist here. You can take the pictures. And now the nice thing about it, actually, this is not art. This is decoration. Because it's not that we insert as you define the way we view reality. This is the reality as it is, and it's still beautiful. Well, sometimes you can do it in a different way. And the different way is to let the system use its own internal things. And then we get a little closer to the question that we raised, the very hard, heavy questions obviously are covered. Okay. So what you do is a version of this experiment now. Oh, I forgot to bring a cup of water. Can somebody bring a cup of water, Jenny?
Yes.
Ah, that's very nice. Can I have this? Nadine, but Jen, can you bring me a styrofoam cup for the other experiment? Okay. That's okay. That's okay. You'll see. It will reduce your entropy. You'll do better physics. Nice. I mean, this is not organic material, but still. Ah. Okay. Let's try to do it here carefully. Okay, let's move it over here. Now you can see that the system has the ability, what you see, or what I'm doing is what you see. There is nothing more, right? It's only glycerol and water. And what is the competition here? It's very simple. Water tied to wet the glycerol, see the front underneath, pushes forward. Water is miscible in glycerol, so what happens? Spontaneously, you form these patterns. It's called Margonian instability, and then it goes on, and this is what drives the thing that you see. You didn't need much external preparation beside asking Jane and Deborah to bring the glycerol and help and so on, and petri dishes. But the system sort of do it by itself, does it by itself. And you see that it's quite rapid, although the driving force is fairly weak. Well, it's not true that it's weak. The driving force of mixing and dissolving of water is very nice. Here you can see also additional pattern at the same time because of evaporation of the glycerol. The glycerol contains water, and you have evaporation, thanks. Evaporation, and you see these very nice patterns that you, I think, that Everett showed in his lecture. Well, most of the pattern here is in two dimension. Why? Because the competition is within a plane. And one thing that we didn't mention, I didn't mention, Gabriello didn't mention, that in the black hole and in the bacterium, membrane is very important. Membrane has a junction of reduction of dimension between the two systems that have higher dimension. And I believe that this is a very important element. Well, now what you can do is add a third dimension. How do I do it? I take food color, and the food color has both colors, and it has alcohol. The alcohol now will evaporate in this direction. So we have not only additional element in the competition, but what we add also is a third dimension, the pattern. We can do it again later. Luckily, this is not something that you have to report, although it's videotaped, so you can see what happens. You see the font. Well, actually, it's on purpose. Now you can see interaction between two of them. Okay, and now it's, I don't know if you can see, but if you look here, there is a tornado in this direction that is formed. And now you'll see all kind of things. You see that there is the source of energy. This is the sun. It provides some alcohol into, and the alcohol starts to form these very nice strings and very nice organization into boxes. They are open boxes. You can see that they well defined and actually fairly stable for some time, but they exchange energy and entropy with the environment. See? I think the nice thing about this demonstration is that you don't have to speak anymore. And for those of you that are interested in dynamical system pattern formation, this is the only system that produces all the phenomena that one observes in these things. And again, it will go on and on and see how stable, it's self-organized into stable generators of behavior. And you see each one of them, if you do it and look through binocular, it's very nice because you can see the dynamic, how they generate all this activity and patterns and region of lower entropy on the way to reach maximum entropy. Okay, so we go on.
Speaking symbolically.
What?
When you talk about on the way to reaching maximum entropy, right? Not precisely.
Not precisely in any sense, but eventually it will be a state of higher entropy because it will mix together and it will be, well, depends how you measure it. If you measure it relative to the glycerol before and the food color before and the mixture afterwards, or you contain all, include also the entropy production that went to the environment. So, question how you look at it. And the other thing that you see that as the system evolves, things become more and more stable. See, the partitioning into boxes and the stability of the boxes, there's still some interaction, but it becomes slower because we driving force, if you want, also symbolically, driving force gets weaker and weaker. Okay.
Well, if the driving force gets weaker and weaker and disappears, then it will disappear. But there is a question of, suppose you keep the driving force constant.
Right.
How will it evolve? And that is an important open question.
Right. And one of the things that we people do in pattern formation for living, which is much, much harder, but doesn't show such nice picture, is really to try to keep the force as accurate as you can in order to learn from this about richness. But if you want to see the production or self-production of things, It's another way. Okay, because we're talking about life, and life evolves all the time. So, okay, now you can have, yeah, thanks. Now you can live, thanks. You can live in a different, now people find many solar systems. So you might live in a different solar system, or be a different distance from the sun. Jen, I need from you one more favor. Can you take water, stir cup glass with water and some detergent, you know? Yeah, detergent that they use for cleaning the dishes, just a little bit. Okay, so let's try to do it again. Here it is. I gave a colloquium in Cornell, and I was afraid, reluctant to carry some of this stuff on plane because people could ask you questions. I had it in the past, before these things happen. And once I carry also acetone with me, because acetone shows you how galaxies form. And a security check, one of the people there decided that he wants to sniff what is in the bottle. Though I told him that this is acetone and he shouldn't sniff it, at least not from close in. And he did. They didn't arrest me anyway. Oh, thanks. Okay, so now we can have another sun.
This is acetone?
No. This is let's add a little bit to this sun, which is different. See, this sun is nicer than our sun, right? Now that's a mixture that I prepared in Cornell, and it has long-range influence because it's a different alcohol that I added, more alcohol. I didn't carry, and I wanted to show them the demonstration, so they had some fluid, so we played. See, this is probably life near a supernova or something.
So it's actually attracting the boundary.
Yeah, you see also the waves that go in because it evaporates and... See different places, different. Okay, now you might live near a double star sun, and yeah, should open. Should I open this? What? Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, good, because the other one is. Okay, so what you can do? This is very hard experiment because you know they have a very strong interaction. It's very hard mentally. It's almost living, right? So it's hard mentally to kill it. Throw it to the garbage. Okay. So now we'll make... No, this is not the right one. This is the right one. Now we'll try to make the analog of a double star sun. So put some here, put the water fast. I want the water to be on the two sides. No, actually I didn't want it this way, but let's do this experiment. That's the opposite of what I wanted to do. But nevertheless. Okay. What I wanted to do, I'll show you in a second. Meantime, you can just try some other food colors for the fun of it. So I'll put one here. And one here, and until then, I'll prepare the right one. By the way, all this food color are good. They're used for cooking, so these ones, not the fantastic ones. They are not.
So they weren't food color.
No. They were for real experiment of gene expression. So that metaphorically is nice. We use this. Anyway, no, they were not. You see, you can have all kind of features here. Sometimes it's nice to do demonstration rather than control experiment because you explore larger portion of the possibility space. Yeah. Okay, and again, it will go forever and ever, and you can try to guess what will happen when they meet and so on, but we don't have time because what is the time? The time is running out. So take this out and have to type one more. Let me see. Okay. Let's put another one here. That's me. I hope that now I do it right. Right means that it's what I wanted to do. So I want the glycerin to be here. Okay, so I want to put a lot of glycerin here. Yeah, I know, I'll try to, I don't want to waste so much of this thing. I want the glycerin here, then a little bit here. Oh, now, water fast. Shouldn't I? Okay, the idea was to make these two suns on the two sides. So now these two sides disappeared, so it's too fast, so I'll show you this one, and then we move to the next topic, which is very important for the biological systems. We'll have to wait till the next program to do the double star. I guess we are not ready yet. Okay. So... No, that didn't work. It didn't work. But what I want to illustrate next is something which is very important. We talked about the competition. That was Turing. What we did, Herbie in his colloquium mentioned it, that we realized something in addition. We can use this one. And this is that when you have open system and it's driven away from equilibrium, there is a new thing, and it came out from the program in the ITP 20 years ago, that you have a singular perturbation. What does it mean? Mathematically, it's a long story. We don't have time. And during demonstration, the idea is very simple. Let's say that you have, let's try black, because some people don't like what I do, say, but a vicious cat. See, so it has these ears like this, and it looks like this, so it's everybody knows that it's vicious. Right? That's symbolically. It's all on the metaphoric level. Then we have, like they say here in California, a very, very friendly mouse. Sometimes you don't think that the mouse of your computer is nice, but this one is nice. So it's smiling and so on. Other than that, the scales are not too right. But anyway, so what is the competition? So we understood various things. What Turing understood is that we need competition between the macro scale and the micro scale. Ever since Schrödinger, mouse represent the micro scale, right? Because this is the microscopic level. Because the cat is the macroscopic level, because of the paradox. Now, both of them represent element of the system, right? If you want, the mouse are all the bacteria, and the cat is the colony, which is made of all the bacteria. So this vicious cat is actually built out of mouses. Anyway, in order to survive, it has to eat the mouse. And the mouse knows that in order to survive, it has to run away. So this is an interplay, and that's why pattern is formed. Because it runs away, and it has to run away afterwards, right? To catch it. What is singular perturbation? Singular perturbation is a very simple idea. Remember, all the colony of the bacteria is made out of the same mice. Or if you want snowflake, all the molecules have the same symmetry, Now assume that all these mice at the same time just been in a picnic and twisted their arm in a soccer, a leg in a soccer game, and they all did it to the right leg, right foot. Okay? Now, so it happened in society that if the right tire, for example, is flat, the car turns to the right. It also happened in society, but that's a different talk. Okay. So now what happens if the cat is not very vicious, namely you are not too far from equilibrium, it will not affect the trajectory of the mouse very much. However, if it is far from equilibrium, then the mouse will prefer to make turns in one direction over the other, and these are the chiral bacteria colony that you saw. I developed a special strain of bacteria that will show singular perturbation because they had chiral. Not that they twisted their leg, but they had flagella. Nevertheless, now what happens is that you have singular interplay, because this trajectory, the fact that it has here a small effect, will affect the macroscopic pattern. And the macroscopic pattern, in return, will affect it. So there is a singular interplay that is resolved by self-consistency or solvability principle. That's the idea. What happened with biological system is more tricky because they have memory. So now what happened to them? First, they can change the leg, like the bacteria can change the chirality according to the external situation, and they have memory. They remember that they saw a very vicious cat. So next time, they know maybe to trick it and use a different schema, and so on. But let's go to the non-living system. It's simpler. So how do we represent singular perturbation in the plate? So what I do is the following. No, I need this because otherwise I destroy this with glycerin. Okay, so what I do is the same experiment that I did at the very, very beginning. Can't continue too long because we're running out of glycerin and I need it for the additional experiment. Okay. So let's bring it to the top. And now, remember I told you that the entire story here goes by the fact that we have surface tension. So what I'm going to do is to change a little bit the surface tension. Oh, that will not be, thanks, but that will not be a little bit, so I'll do it a little bit. So I mix this together with water, so it will really be a little bit. So now you see by yourself that it's a little bit. Okay? And I'm going to add some of this. And we can add singular perturbation to the environment. We can add it to the system itself, if you want. And what happens is the following. Hope this is the right soap. See, that's the idea of singular perturbation. It's entirely changed the behavior of the system. The nice thing is that the bacteria know about it. Now, equally nice pattern will be if I change the other direction, but I think I'm running out of time.
You want to wipe?
Yeah, thank you. Out of time, but let's at least... Is it possible to have some more transparencies anyway?
Here.
Blank. Now, these are the kind of...
Right there. Please.
Yeah, that's one more. Now, just to remind you about the bacteria also had... No, I'm not show you this thing, I'll show you where the hell it is. Here it is, that what happens in the bacteria case, forget about the other one. In the bacteria case, we had the same situation. We moved from this type of behavior, this type of behavior, and each branch, you see, it's different type of behavior because they are longer. And they show this singular perturbation moving from here to here. Another thing which is interesting, as you move from a pattern which is not as complex to one which is more complex, you have more organization on the microscopic level, which shows you, or suggests, implies, that maybe it's not accidental, this complex pattern. But they want to make this complex pattern. And there is another strand that we developed. This one, that all these vortices turn around, and it's a higher degree of organization on the microscopic level, and it has higher level of complexity on the macroscopic level. Okay, now, I guess, we are towards the end of the non-living system, but there is one more experiment which is very important, because I showed you that simple systems can produce complex patterns. Now I'd like to show you another thing that I also developed when I gave a talk to people in philosophy of science, is that complex system can produce simple patterns. Or sometimes you can produce simple patterns, and sometimes you produce complex patterns. So this experiment is a little risky, and I need someone to help me to put here some liquid nitrogen, because it involves liquid nitrogen. And let's try also to do this trick. I want later on to boot small spot. That will be addition later on that we didn't do last time. Okay. Just to show you that it's not all the same thing, and it's also to demonstrate additional element in the bacteria, and this element is that bacteria, as they grow, living system, So let me hold it. That's enough. Thanks. Okay, bacteria, as they grow, change the environment to make it suitable for them, more suitable. So we can do it with the liquid nitrogen. We can do it different ways. We can drop a lot of liquid nitrogen, and things will bubble, and you can see some boxes, and they interact, and it looks completely chaotic. But you can also make things that look very simple. Those of you that remember spherical harmonics and so on that you see here, you'd have a stethoscope. And here it's like bacteria, you see they form their own environment. Why? Because they evaporate. As they evaporate, they cool down the glycerol, it shrinks, so they make a cat's cradle, or whatever you want for themselves. And we'll see. This is, again, quite complex behavior, because it has a lot of stuff going on. But we can cause them to make a simple behavior, which I'll show you in a second. Here you start to see something interesting going, that you have nucleation centers and they interact, and so on and so forth. They also die in a dramatic manner. We'll see in a second. You see, they started large and they make cage that doesn't fit them very well at this stage of life. Sorry for the metaphor.
One of the basic definitions of life is reproduction. And when you make these patterns as metaphors, I understand they're metaphors and just examples.
Oh, they are not.
Are there examples in which you can make them reproduce?
No. And they are nothing like life. The only thing is that life do carry the principle, I'll come back to it in a second afterwards. All these things it show you, it's beautiful, it's interesting, we can learn from it, it is not life. Mm-hmm. And I don't try to mimic life by doing it, I try to show some essential thing and go back to the riddle that I posed at the beginning. Now let me see if I have to put more liquid nitrogen, or this will, I change the glycerin. Now, I guess I have to add some. Okay, now you can make smaller ones And when you make smaller ones, you can see the nice pattern, that behavior, the spherical harmonics, and so on, especially in this one. If you do this with your eyes, sometimes it helps to see it, but you can have all combination of spherical harmonics if you use stereoscopic thing. It has some dirt in it, so you don't see it very clearly. Might try one of these. It's also too cold now for it. See, it's too cold, Tony. This is a joke. I say it's too cold to life. It's too cold for them to live. It's not serious. It's a sort of joke. Okay. Now I try to make them some more. Now you can see them better. The difference. Let me try to change them. Okay, so let me try to go back to Tony's question. Why did I show you these things? Well, first, it's fun. I believe you can learn a lot of things about pattern formation. And you can learn that this is not life. And, Tony, there is something which is missing. And then I have also a movie to show if it will work, and that's just fun movie. Now let's be for a second serious. So we have this problem. I try to avoid defining life because I don't think that it can be defined. It's easier for me to define what are the difficulties with life rather than to define life. And as I told you, let's look at the bacterium. Okay, we said the delta E is about 1 electron volt. And there is no wonder. This is the energy or the typical quantum of energy that you absorb from the sun. And it's lucky because this is a typical energy of chemical reaction. Then there is delta T, which is of the order of 1 millisecond. Which is also consistent. What is it consistent with? Well, remember that we have to replicate one gene, which are 12 bases. And now talk about distance, because remember, here, when we had this part of the blackboard, we had crazy things like delta E, delta T equals H bar, delta X, delta P equals H bar. We don't have it because it's not quantum mechanics. We have the analog of it. What is the analog of it? We do have a balance between delta E and delta T, and we have also a typical length, delta L. Delta L is determined by the two things. Diffusion of chemicals within the cell. Diffusion constant is about 1 micrometer squared per second. Okay? To put things consistent, you have to remember also that the wavelength of the radiation that we absorb from the sun is of the order of 3,000 angstrom, which is of the order of this thing. If you think about it, it's no wonder that bacteria should be of the order of 1 micron. Not much smaller. They can be much larger, but that should be the typical thing. What is delta T? Delta T, you can say that this is about the distance that you want to replicate the bases. And the base, each base, is about 3 angstrom. So what you want to do, you have this type of diffusion. You want the action to be localized in places. You must have something of the order of 1 millisecond. Because it takes about 1 second to go from here to here. I mean in diffusion. If you take 1 second, you multiply by this, take the square root, is about 1 micron. So this is a consistency. There is another consistency in all these things, because if you take on Earth 1 micrometer, over 1 micrometer, you absorb about 10 to the 10 quanta or photons. Within 1 millisecond, you absorb about 10 to the 7, which is quite incredible, because if you think in these terms, you realize something which is also consistent on Earth, and this is the fact that most organic material on Earth, unless human being production, have the energy content, so the energy versus mass convergence, or the cosmological constant that they use in cosmology, is about the ratio, if you think about it, that 100 gram is about 200 calorie, 300 calorie, or remember that these are kilocalories. So if you remember this, means that 1 gram corresponds to about, in terms of joule, 1,000 joule. About 10 to the 3 joule. One bacterium is about 10 to the minus 12 gram. So if you take these ratios and estimate it, you see that it's a damn efficient machine, probably one of the most efficient machines that exist. Because it uses, unlike us, it consumes also, it reproduces every 20 to 30 minutes. And remember, you have 1,000 genes. So this is about the time that it takes to replicate all of them. In terms of amount of food that they consume, and this is the pictures that I show you here, is why they have, and Herbie mentioned in his talk, why they have this nice branching thing, because I didn't give them enough food. I know exactly how much food I gave them, in grams. So they had to form these branching patterns. Okay, but that's on the colony level.
That experiment, what kind of food did you give them?
In this experiment, I fed them already with the food which other bacteria produce. Actually, not other bacteria. It was a circle, because bacteria produce food, then they produce grass, then beef eat the grass, then we grind it, then we bring it back to the other bacteria. So that was, that's the typical food, but you can grow bacteria on a single source of carbon with no organic food. The reason that we grow them on these things, it's a long story. If you grow them on a single source of carbon, they produce a lot of waste product, balance of entropy. And then the patterns do not look as nice as they do. They are more complex. Anyway, but this is the ratio, this is the gram, and then if you look how much energy they produce or arrive to Earth in terms of radiation, and the amount that they consume within replication is only 3 times their body weight. And remember that what they need both to create a new bacterium, both to reduce the entropy, and perform metabolism at the same time. So that's quite a thing, but Tony, I didn't answer your question. The question is, in what sense it's different from the things that we saw? Because we still have the puzzle. How come this energy arrives? What I want to propose, I don't have a solution to the puzzle. I think this is maybe the most fundamental question. People try to answer without understanding this. They try to answer how life created. We do it many times in physics. We don't understand the various things. We try to understand by looking at singular points, phase transition. or other singular point. So they try to understand the origin of life. The only intelligent thing that I think I can propose at this point is another thing to look at, because bacteria know how to do something when they don't have enough food. So let's see what they do if they don't have enough food. Also, Herbie mentioned it, I want to show you a picture. And I believe that this is very educational. And it might give us a hint. Now I need somebody higher, taller, to bring this down. And supposed to use tools. That's evolution of the screen, right? Okay. And we think that non-living systems don't have their own free will, right? Okay. What happened to bacteria? Okay. If they have food, that's what they do. They divide. Forget about the middle part, which is also important, because they... But if there is not enough food, what they do, they spoilate. Namely, and this is very important, because this is also the genes that the bacteria develop in order to do this process actually enable higher organisms to develop and germinate the way we do. Each bacterium, first of all, they do it collectively, and that's very important. That's additional lesson we learned from the bacteria, that in order, it is consistent to have them live if they communicate. Okay, Tony, this is to your question. What is the difference in communication? Because you can say that if you have star, they also have interaction. What is the essential part of the communication of bacteria versus non-living system? Is the fact that each of the boxes, each one is an open box, each of the boxes changes itself according to the interaction with the other boxes. So they took singular perturbation into one step higher, and because of the internal structure that they have, each bacterium changes itself when they interact. If you want, in 1972, Phil Anderson wrote a very nice paper in Science about more is different. In the case of living system, it is extended to more is different on all level. Isolated bacterium will not show you all the tools that they have in order to survive that they use when they are a colony.
You mean starving a single bacterium that doesn't produce the spore?
No. They need interaction to do, but not for only this. The entire pattern that I show, it's all based on communication. So if you want non-living system, if we go to this metaphor, non-living system is like making granola or salad. You take many, many ingredients, mix them together, okay, and then more is different, okay? If you think about the living system, is more like French cooking or cooking, really in the sense that you take many, many ingredients, you put them together, cook them, to the point that it's hard to tell what they were originally. Okay, because each ingredient changes itself during to the process. Then you can go on that singular perturbation is adding spaces and so on and so forth. But the interesting thing, they do it collectively. They emit communication. They send messages, chemical messages, I'm starved, let's spoilate. The other one respond and say, we are also starved. Then they do internal processing, assess the information, send a signal, I vote to spoilate. Then they receive the signal, see what the poll or the majority decide, and then they spoilate. The reason is that if an individual bacterium in a colony will spoilate on itself, it will be a disaster, because some parts of the colony have more food, some parts have less food. But not the main point that I wanted to emphasize. I wanted to emphasize is that what they do, they replicate the DNA, wrap it in a special membrane. And this is very, very special membrane. And I prepared to use some picture of...
Before you go on, can I ask a question?
Yeah.
This is a typical question that biologists it's a quantitative question that typically physicists would immediately ask, is that when you sporulate, does the colony have to have a critical size? And if it does have a critical size, what is that size? You answered the market question, obviously, if two bacteria, one, it wouldn't happen, but if you have a large, it would happen. What is the transition?
It's a wonderful question. We don't know. We have some idea what it is from experiment that we did. We don't know the question. We did similar experiment I mentioned in studying the neural network, which has a similar question. When a collection of neurons will function as unitary network? And we came out to the number of 50 of them. I believe that in order to spoliate, there are different numbers that in order to they form a new identity. And we'll talk about it. You don't need so many of them, okay? It's of the order of hundreds of thousands. Now, this is what happened. You see, this is the bacterium. On one side, they replicate the DNA and wrap it in a special membrane. So you see, this is the first time you see bacteria pregnant. And if you want to check that everything is okay, this is scanning electron microscope, so you see outside that it's prepared. What you can do is transmission electron microscope or the ultrasound of the pregnant bacteria, and that's what you get. And you see this is the spore inside. And this is the DNA wrapped into. I don't know why this picture never. We had to do it ourselves because biologists didn't look at it. And this is a spore that broke open. Yeah?
What else is in the spore? Is it just DNA or are there other proteins that you need to start with?
Okay, that's also excellent question. We don't know. The process that been studied extensively is the process how they sporulate. What left and how they open, it's only now began to be studied. Because opening of the spore is one of the most fantastic things that happen in nature. Why? Because the spores are very, very stable. You can cook them, you can take them out of space. Actually, people did take them on a shuttle, expose them to outer space, brought them back and revived them. They can survive a lot of things. And then you put them on a petri dish like this, with a little bit of sugar or a little bit of food, and within short time, they break open. And the question, how does this miracle happen? Because on one hand, it seems that this membrane, you can see here the membrane, is very, very inert to any communication which with the outside world. But then when you have the right signal outside, and this signal is very, very weak, far weaker than any thermal noise that you have. Somehow they can detect it. And something which is pre-programmed inside, answer your question, the DNA is not sufficient. You can take DNA, wrap it in things, and it will never create a bacterium. So somehow something which is programmed in, here in, inside this intracellular gel can detect very, very weak signal, provided they are the right signal. So they can decode information in the environment, which is weaker than noise.
The membrane is made of some special tough material, very different from the normal cell membrane, which is very permeable, right? Molecules go in and out. What kind of material is
that? Don't know. It's not been studied. But the same thing happened not with bacteria only. They've been evolved in evolution. If you take seeds, if you take spore or fungi, it's the same story. It's something which is very inert. You can keep the seeds forever, right? And then you put it on something with a little bit, some plate like this with a little bit of water, and all of a sudden they break open. So what is it? I don't know the answer. I believe, though, that this is the key to understand the mystery of the bacteria and the mystery of the origin of life and how we go from something like this to create light. And now, I hope if those of you that still have the mental power, movie is very different. I have to say something about the movie. It's, let's see if we can show it. Okay, now it worked. The movie that I show you is a movie I helped the BBC prepare a movie, Beyond the Naked Eye, and then I wrote a script, so I was allowed to take parts of the movie that I videotaped for them and also take the sound of the thing that they wrote for them and edit a new movie. This is not the BBC movie. This is my version of the movie. And now, can we turn this on? It is on. Now I want to see if this will play. Is there somebody here from the computers, people? What do I have to do here? Window Media Player. Let's see if it will play it. This is not on. Now it's on. Okay. But they told me that I have to look here. What? No. And not to look over here, but to look over there. So I have to go back to the... What? The mouse is here?
Pointer went off to the upper left.
Because the way to play, they put the screen outside of the range. Here it is. Yes. Can we call somebody? Peter, can you call one of them to come before I do something terrible wrong?
You can move that glass.
What?
The glass is in the lighting.
Yeah, I wanted to do what Woody Allen likes, that life will integrate from the glass into the... let me say that. Somehow... Okay, so meantime, I'll tell you some speculation. Many people talk about the origin of life. Here he is. No need for speculation. Now we are back to real life. Alex?
Thank you. Yes.
I got lost again.
All right. Let's see if we can figure out what's going on.
You want to tell us the speculation?
Okay, now, is this the movie that we prepared or another one? Let's see. Okay, can we make it full screen? Yes. And the voice?
That I'm not sure about.
Try to make it if you can. Okay, because it has this English lady that... No, there's no... Don't you have to do some setup in the... The voice is very important. Because it has a very nice music. What is this? Okay, the idea is that it's pity that it's not, I guess it's influenced by the fact that it's a Charlie Chaplin movie, but these parts are parts with voice. Okay, the idea is that they don't show you their trick when they isolate, and like us, I now remember the words, they eat and reproduce, but it's nicer to hear the English lady that describe it.
I'm not sure if I'm going to be able to amplify it. But...
Do you have a microphone? Wait.
Let me get the other one so we can play it over the speaker.
Yeah, but we can... My microphone is not on, right?
It's on, but it won't be amplified. I'll get you the other one.
Okay, so let's go... Okay, we'll see this. We can go back. Yeah, but I need him. Where is it? No, I can't. Where's the mouse? Okay. Okay, can we go to the beginning and put it?
Sure.
Just you see, you hear the music, and then you see the voice. You see why it's essential to understand the metaphors. Go to the beginning. I just put it near. Mm.